Welcome to Big Dog Ball Talk. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Fleagle, bringing you guys a recap of this weekend's NBA action. Of course, previewing the biggest game of the year, the NBA Cup, the in-season tournament, Milwaukee Bucks, Oklahoma City Thunder. Everybody wants to know who's walking away with. We've been saying $1 million. Might actually only be 500K for our hearing per player. So we were even hyping it up more than it was. What a fucking joke, but we will be previewing the game.
That's nothing to me.
On Tuesday. It's nothing to us. I mean, 500K is halfway through an episode. We both already profited that. But these guys will all be able to buy a cool little car or something with it. Like, they're, I don't know. I put it all on black. That's what I do. You're already in Vegas.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, along with that, we actually had some trades or a trade in the NBA that we'll be going over. We always like to get those in. As well as, I talked a little bit about it last podcast that the ratings for the NBA have been down. And we want to have a little discussion on our theories as why that's been happening, as well as a recap of a record-setting Warriors versus Mavericks game. But to start it off, Jordan, let's get into it. NBA Cup. This was an interesting tournament throughout, you know, the knockout rounds. Obviously, the Thunder almost getting the exact final score that I'd predicted. I think I said 120-95 or 115-95 or something. It was 111-96 for the Thunder. And the Bucks and the Hawks was an awesome game. Yep. Giannis and Trae Young just dueling it out. And the Bucks just able to kind of eke out that win in the fourth quarter. It was a really tightly contested one. So let's start with the Hawks and the Bucks, though, Jordan. This was a we kind of previewed it coming into it. I think, again, other than the OKC Thunder, I'm pretty much like 0-for on all my picks. The Bucks, they kind of flexed their muscles a little bit in the paint in this one to kind of get the job done. Damian Lillard, you know, he chipped in his 25, 6, and 7 as well on not the best shooting, but good enough. But once again, it was Giannis just taking it down into the paint, controlling the boards, as well as Bobby Portis doing what he needed to do, almost double-doubled off the bench in this one as well. Whereas the Hawks, Jalen Johnson, you did what you could, man. 15-10, still a good night, but it's going to be a long one when you're being matched up in the paint with Giannis so frequently. No one else really on the Hawks was able to get going. Another decent game, I thought, from DeAndre Hunter, but not enough weapons right now, not enough experience for the Hawks to keep up with the unguardable Giannis, it seemed like, in this one.
Yeah, and you could see that coming a mile away. It's what we highlighted when we talked about this game on Saturday there.
I didn't even shout out Brookie the Wookie, 16 points.
Great seven, game from him.
7 for 10, yeah. Him and Giannis had that huge block down the stretch as well.
Yes. Yeah, and they showed why they, I know Brook's getting up there in age, but still one of the best defensive front courts in the league when they're locked in. Brook had a bit of a shaky start to the season, but I think he's picked it up. And yeah, games like this, like he only had 16 points, but team high plus 21, which is way, way, far and away the best on the Bucks in this one. A couple of blocks in there and it just efficient overall. So yeah, I think this was, a sign. If you can get Giannis playing well, Dame playing well, and Brooke sort of holding it down defensively, then the Bucks, look pretty darn good. So, and that was what I was most impressed with, I think, is the defense of the Bucks kind of containing this Hawks offense that isn't like, when you look at the numbers in terms of the efficiency, they're not, in the top 10 or anything offensively, but they've got the weapons to really go off. And I thought the Bucks did a good job containing them. Giannis, you just don't have anyone if you're the Hawks that you can feel that good about covering him, just body type alone. Like you don't have, your wings, you'd probably say, are too small, and there's no like super savvy, big, like Al Horford, Marc Gasol type, who can sort of, do anything to bother him. So he kind of had his way with them. I think that's still a weakness of the Hawks. Like if you look at them in a playoff context, I know we've talked about them recently and how they're kind of surging or sort of had been at least until this game. And it's like, who are you even going to put necessarily on like a guy like Jason Tatum? If you go up against them, other sort of bigger wings that you're going to see in the East or in the playoffs in general, like, DeAndre Hunter, technically Jalen Johnson's decent. You've got the great barrier thief, but he's more of he's obviously going to be on guards most of the time. So that's a bit of a shaky point. And Giannis really, made sure that they pressed that advantage there. And I think the more experienced team won in this one. But like you said, it was close down the stretch. You know, Trae Young had some chances there, and he was, going for it. I thought he had a good game, all things considered. 35, 7, and 10. Like, you'll take that on quite efficient shooting as well. Got to the free throw line 17 times. He was being aggressive. You just didn't get quite enough. Like, Jalen Johnson, he could have had a better game. He missed all four of his threes. He did all right. I know he's been kind of dealing with some injury stuff more recently. But you need more from him as now solidly your second guy on offense. Because outside of that, you're starting Reza Shea. He only gives you 2 points. Dyson Daniels is great, but he's not really an offensive type guy. And then, your bench comes up a little bit short for you. But all in all, it was a good game. Like I said, I just wanted these games to be close, competitive down to the wire here. But Giannis continues his fucking streak of, do you see this? 20 point. He hasn't shot under 50% in a single game this year, which is kind of fucking insane.
I mean, yeah, it's all, it's 90% dunks. So, yes. I mean, I get it.
It's not that impressive, I guess, when you think about it.
It's impressive. It's just not like he's not taking too many jumpers.
No, he did hit one really nice midi in this game, though, like a fadeaway, mm-hmm. I think on the left side.
He's had like one or two every game. I'll give him that. He's been flirting with it, like showing these signs that maybe he could shoot the ball. But I mean, if you know you can just dunk it on guys or just blow through them, drop your shoulder, why the fuck would you bother with a jump shot?
Yeah, and in this one, no, he doesn't even, he knows, I think he's getting smarter with it, or like, he's been through his phases where he's like, I'm going to shoot threes now to prove everyone I can do it. Like, he didn't even attempt one in this one. I'd rather that than, going 1 for 5 just to prove that you're not scared to take them. Like, just do what you know works. And yeah, that's what he did.
Well, and that's why he's so dynamic, right? I mean, he's a super underrated passer as well. I mean, 9 assists in this one. Yep. He's been one of the best playmakers on the Bucks for, 5, 6 years now. Yep. And continues to get better in that kind of situation. Very similar to kind of the LeBron archetype of the big ball handling forward that can do a little bit of everything and just control the game from all five positions. So really interesting to see Giannis continue to do that again, potentially in the MVP conversation this year if the Bucks can maybe get a little bit higher up in the Eastern Conference standings. But we'll see how that goes. Maybe a NBA Cup win will seal that for him.
Yes.
But moving on to the other side, the Western Conference. Part of the bracket, the Rockets and the Thunder. It was close in the first half. In fact, the Rockets actually had a slim lead going into it, about 1 point going into halftime. And then once they came out of the tunnels, the Thunder said, all right, let's stop fucking playing around. And they put boots to asses. And that was really it. The Thunder, this is just, the Rockets are a good team, but the Thunder are a great team. Fred VanVleet continued to be a bit of a chucker, really great, assist numbers. He had 9 boards, which is crazy for, the small guy always, fighting down low. Not a great showing from him. Kind of an off night for Sengun as well. Jalen Green, a rough night for him as well. So it really just, maybe some of the bright lights. Like, I know I don't think the guys are like feeling pressure because of it's the NBA Cup, but you're in Vegas, you're playing on these weird courts, you're doing all kinds of different travel. Like, this is a weird situation that they're not quite as used to as a team. Whereas, the Thunder, they've been through the playoffs now. They've got guys who have been in tough games. You got Alex Caruso, who's he's a former NBA champion. You've got lots of guys that can play in these kind of more high pressure situations. And I think that's kind of what showed, especially in that second half. Jalen Williams, 25 and 5 for him. SGA 32, 8 and 6. Really, that starting five for the Thunder was just all gangbusters. Every single one of them was doing what they needed to do to get the win. The bench of the Thunder, in a rare kind of off game from them, didn't really contribute much in this one. So the primetime players kind of came to shine for the Thunder in this one. And I just think it was a bit of a skill issue, a bit of a talent gap for the Rockets in this one. Still a great team, but it's tough to beat the Thunder on any given night. But if they're actually trying to, make some Skrilla, then you're probably not going to get the win.
Yeah. Like you said, it was, you're watching the game. It's close. It's like, oh, this is competitive. And it did seem like the Thunder just were able to flip a switch that the Rockets don't even have access to and just, put their foot down, made sure this one was over as soon as they sort of wanted to do that. And I think they are just clearly the superior team. Again, no shade to the Rockets. Still, we just talked about them, one of the best and by the numbers, second best defense in the entire league next to OKC. Mm-hmm. But again, as of right now, 19th offensively. So it's like you're not to fancy yourself one of, a contender in the West. You've got to get those numbers up. You've got to get more consistency here. And you look at like across the board to have Thompson off the bench with 19, which you don't get all the time. That's mm-hmm. a bit of a rarity. But then everyone in your the most people scored in your starting five between Smith and Brooks at 14, Jalen Green and Şengün Green at 12, and Şengün at 13. So it's like you look at these sort of spread out offensive attack, and sometimes you're like, oh, that's good. You know, the other team doesn't really know where it's coming from. You know, like it can be a positive if you've got sort of these five weapons, quote unquote, on the floor. But the issue is none of them were really weapons. Like OKC wasn't really worried about any of them having, you know, the hot hand
Dylan
or
Brooks
anything
is your
like that.
Leading scorer as a starter. Exactly. That's embarrassing. A hilarious game from him also. 4 for 13 from three. He didn't give
he
a
shot
fuck.
Him.
Just run three line to three line.
Yes. But
it's my type of hoops.
It's like, yeah, if you're Houston, we just talked about, you know, where Jimmy Butler, if he gets traded, could end up. And, you know, I said Houston makes a lot of sense. Like, they really do need a go-to scorer. Like, they clearly just don't have it. And they've got a lot of guys who right now are just playing over their heads. And you saw it in this game. There's nowhere against the best, you know, mind you, it is against the best defense in the league. It's hard for anyone to score against OKC, but it really showed you, like, damn, we can't just rely on like a high pick and roll with Fred trying to make things happen. You know, this kind of short point guard with these guys hounding you, and you don't really have any real shooters, you know, to spray it out to. Şengün's done a lot of the heavy lifting, but you know, I think this is sort of a this was a good example this game of how if you look at him in a playoff context. He's still very much baby Jokic. He's not going to give you Jokic level production. I don't think he's ready for that. So Houston really needs those some sort of offensive reinforcements here through trade. Maybe I'm sure they'll be looking to do that. But you know, you look at them too. OKC kind of broke free. It's not like you were able to contain SGA. He got his 32-8-6, like you said. Hartenstein had a good game scoring.
Eating at the line.
Yeah. So, like, Houston's was still a great defensive team, like we've been saying, but they even, like, I just talked about OKC and how they always win the possession game and get way more shots. That script was kind of flipped in this one. 96 shots for Houston to only 80 for OKC, but Houston just shoots 36% overall and 24% from the three-point line. Like, the shooting was just awful. Like, they could have won this game if you improve those numbers because, you know, you pushed OKC on kind of their weak point with Chet out of the lineup, and you out rebounded them. It was 19 offensive boards to 4 for the Rockets. So, you know, they kind of did what they had to do. They just didn't have the talent to be able to close the gap. So, you know, shout out the Rockets though. I'm good for them making it as far as they did. You come up against what is either the best or second best team in the league right now. And, but yeah, OKC is just, they're just an inevitability at this point.
Well, and you know, you mentioned Jimmy Butler there. He did say that our reports are out that Jimmy has made it clear that he will opt out of his, I think it's like $52 million player option, which is absolutely ludicrous.
Are you sure about that? I don't know.
If someone pays him more than $50 million, I will be shocked in the free agency. But I would say that this definitely means that the trade's probably going to happen. So be on the lookout for that one. It'll probably happen. We're recording this Monday, just after work, 5:30. It's probably going to happen at like 6:45 Eastern.
Definitely.
On the Monday. And that's then you guys won't get to hear about it unless we decide to put in some overtime. But with this game going on, Bucks, Thunder, Jordan, let's start with our picks. I mean, this is going to be, it should be a tight game. The Thunder are, depending on which book you're looking at, 4.5 to 5.5 point favorites. This is a game that I don't envision being super high scoring, or it's going to be incredibly high scoring. No, it's going to be one way or the other.
No in between.
There's not going to be any average nights for anybody in this one. But really, again, I think it's just going to come down to the star power in this one. I don't think Dame is going to have a great night. There's just so many good perimeter players, even though, you know, he's still an elite offensive talent. That's going to be really tough for him. Giannis is going to, you know, do what he can to kind of make up for it. But the shooting of the Rockets, in my opinion, I think it's just going to be a little bit too good for them to handle.
You said the Rockets, but
I said the Rockets. You. You know what I mean. Yeah, the Rockets are. They're not shooting too well.
Yeah, they're really not. But, shot themselves out.
Well, they'll figure it out. But yeah, the Thunder should be able to shoot the ball a lot better than from outside than the Bucks are able to. And again, just too many playmakers to contain. Like for the Bucks, it's really just make sure Giannis is somewhat limited. Don't let Dame go off. And then after that, you're like, what? Chris Middleton, who's still coming off the bench. Bobby Portis off the bench. Like no one else is really striking fear into your heart on that team. Whereas, OKC, you've got four or five guys who legitimately could, make you hurt if you give them too much space out there. So I think I'm going to ride with the Thunder to win the NBA Cup, and they won't. They'll probably do like the copyright
infringement
on us after they win it. Yes. At the same time, I don't feel like any of these guys give two shits about this. They're just collecting accolades on their way to the playoffs where they will probably be the number one seed in the Western Conference.
Yes. I think that's a good bet to make. And I'm wondering though. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, if the Thunder do win, and then let's say win the championship, like, is it gonna? Do you think it'll eventually be like a sense of pride, like a tradition after the first team does it, like to win the in-season tournament and the finals, like they do in soccer, like trying to get the triple crown or whatever? Hopefully, because that would make the NBA Cup a little bit more intriguing if teams felt like, oh shit, okay, to really bolster our legacy, we got to win both of these things. So I think that could be a good thing if the Thunder. I mean, hey, maybe the Bucks. Think they can do the same thing as well. I think they'll have a harder time getting out of the East, but I agree with everything you're saying. I'm gonna zag and just pick the Bucks just for fun. I don't actually think
I've been wrong 90% of these picks.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You're kind of forcing my hand. Like I think it's more likely the Thunder win, but fuck it. I will bet on a big Giannis game and Dame having an outrageous shooting night that sort of putting them over the top. Because I think. If there's one weakness the Thunder have had this year offensively compared to last year, is they're more shaky when it comes to shooting the three. Like they can have nights where they look gangbusters, and so many of their players last year were over 40%. This year, like, the percentages aren't as great. Like, Caruso's come in and hasn't shot the ball as well. SGA can be a little bit streaky from out there. Same thing with Jalen Williams. Like, they've still got incredible shooters, so it probably all comes out in the wash. Like, they still hit enough from out there, but there are games, the odd game when they all kind of go cold at once. And then if you're thinking, okay, OKC can adjust and get inside and score. We just said it's hard to score against Giannis and Brooke Lopez in there. That's one sort of front court duo that really matches, if not outmatches, the size advantage that OKC usually has. And so they might miss a guy like Chet in this matchup. So give me a big Giannis triple double type game in the Bucks winning a close one.
All right. Well, be on the lookout for the Tuesday night primetime matchup. It's the only basketball game that we got on. So enjoy that. Don't like that. Just get the fucking, just have other games going on at the same time. Nobody gives a fuck about the NBA Cup. Just have it keep going. I don't like that we've had so much less basketball to watch this week because of this stupid ass tournament.
I know. And it's going to be a blowout because it's the only game in the it's Adam Silver's, dream. We're going to talk about the ratings here shortly. It's going to be an absolute blowout and no one's going to watch. And that's the way it goes.
And also, what a great decision to have it on a Tuesday night. Fucking,
I know.
Awesome. That's when everybody Tuesday wants to get up December. And go for a big game. Yeah, nothing says big game feel like Tuesday evening.
Yeah,
8:30. Fuck out of here.
Just beautiful.
Yeah,
it's been dark for really hours dumb. And hours.
Yeah,
I'm sleepy by 8:30 this time of year. I'm almost conked out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think we're both at the same point here. But moving on to some interesting talk here. Let's talk about some trades here, Jordan. One of the biggest prime candidates for trade that we've been kind of previewing a little bit throughout the season from the Brooklyn Nets, and probably not the last move that the tanking Nets are going to make. But Dennis Schroeder on his way to the Bay Area, being flipped for D'Anthony Melton, who is still injured as of right now, two-way guard Reese Beekman, as well as three unprotected second round picks. Jordan, I think it's an interesting move. When I heard Schroeder to Golden State, it was not the team that I would have thought would need a Dennis Schroeder. And then I've seen some reports as well that they're not trying to make him, you know, kind of like that secondary ball handler off the bench or anything. They want to play him in the backcourt next to Steph as the primary ball handler and have Steph be playing more off ball. I don't really know how that's going to go. Dennis Schroeder is not exactly known at, like, his assist numbers are great, but I'll say
his
this.
Numbers overall are team, great. Remember? Yes. Blind comparisons last year, better yes, than true. Our last mm-hmm. episode, better than Jamal Murray's mm-hmm. at least.
Yes. But the thing is, it's just historically, this guy has had a bit of a problem with his ego. And I think that if you put him on a team with Steph Curry and you say you are the alpha controlling the rock and moving it up and down the court and you can just set this guy up for scoring, he's probably going to look Steph Curry off quite a few times and probably
gonna
go and do shit on his own.
The night-night to the knock-knocked. How do you say knocked in night in German? He's going to come up with his own. He's going to try and co-opt it, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not going to go well.
Yeah, I don't really like the fit. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you gave up 3 second-round picks and a guy who's not playing in a G League dude. Like, I don't think the haul is that bad for, Schroeder. Like, if anything, I think they probably could have gotten a little bit better than what they got for the Nets, I should say. Yeah. But, you know, they just want to collect that draft capital. You can always find gems in the second round and, you know, you get 3 extra picks in the next couple of years. They're all kind of staggered out. Maybe you can package those second-round picks into a deal later on. Who knows? But, I mean, yeah, it's just I don't really know what team would have made more sense for Schroeder, but it just didn't seem like that was the move to make, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I sort of get the vision that, you know, when you look outside of Steph, you could use some more on-ball playmaking. Like you pointed out, I think, last week, Brandon Pajemski is having
he's horrible.
A bit of a slump.
I don't know what's going on.
He just has not been playing well. And I think that's sort of the role they envisioned him playing more this year based on what, you know, what he looked like last year of this guy that mm-hmm. could handle it, push Steph off ball. You know, I do get the vision and you don't want, 36, however old Steph is now, to have so much of the responsibility of, you know, playing that point guard role and having someone in there. It's historically worked out really well for the Warriors in the Steph era. You look at like Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala, mm-hmm. who was kind of a, you know, ball handling three. So I sort of get the vision, but I agree with you that it's, I don't know if it's worth the risk bringing in a guy like Schroeder. It's crazy. He is really one of those guys. It's almost like Tobias Harris before everyone realized he was terrible. You'd get Schroeder. He starts out, I mean, we experienced it on the Raptors, and you only experience mm-hmm. when you really watch him every night. It's like, oh, he starts out, it's like, this is great. He had just come off of a great run with Germany at the FIBA World yep. Cup before he joined the Raptors, too. It was like, wow, this is...
Coming off a good Olympics.
Yes, well, exactly.
Steve Kerr was even saying, this guy's kicked yep. my ass on 3 continents. Okay, man. Yeah, get ready to see him kick your ass on yes. this one as well.
Yes, so it's like, you know, it starts out well. It's like, oh, look at the stats he's putting up. He's going to have a few good games, you know, 20 plus points, 10 plus assists. Maybe, you know, it'll be yep. great. But slowly but surely, at every stop he's been to, it's like, okay, he wants a little bit more control than he really should have. He's acting, playing a bit above his head, taking away from some of the better players that should be getting the shots on this team. And then he's not very consistent. Like he'll have shitty ass mm-hmm. nights from three as much as he'll have good nights from three. And same with the playmaking. And the defense also comes and goes. You know, he was really great for the Lakers when they made it to the conference finals a couple years ago. But, there was nothing to write home about defensively on the Raptors. And you know, it's kind of hard to judge his play, obviously, so far this year on the Nets because none of their games really matter. And the stats do look good. But
the perfect place yeah. for him to be is on a shitty team where the wins don't matter. Yep. He can get his stats and field command. That is genuinely what this guy needs.
Yeah. And I just don't see him as a Warriors player, like a guy who's going to make the extra pass and be within that system and, run a pick and roll with Draymond and, you know, kick it to him right mm-hmm. at the right time so that like and then Draymond can do what he does, roll into the rim or getting it out to Steph. Like, I just don't, I don't see that vision. So I get what they're trying to do, but I don't think he's the right guy. And I think there's a higher likelihood that it'll backfire than it'll somehow work perfectly. And you also don't really solve your problem. You have too many guys. If you're the Warriors, like, I know they're trying to play this 12-man rotation because they're trying to, it seems like, based on the reporting from Shams and everything, probably showcase as many of these guys as possible because they're trying to still get an even bigger star in there. So, you know, mm-hmm. that might be part of it. But they just have so many guys. I don't think you need another. Like, if anything, I'd like a 3-for-1 or at least a 2-for-1 type consolidation trade where you send out a couple of these guys and replace them with one sort of more clearly going to be effective type player. So, yeah, I don't love it. Maybe it could work. It's not, you know, I'm not outraged by it. I do see the vision, but yeah, I think it's a bit too risky. I'm not in the Schroeder business. Never again.
Yeah. Once you get hurt once, you kind of learn from it. Exactly. But talking about the Golden State Warriors, they had an intriguing matchup against the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday night, where a NBA record 48 total threes were hit in this game. In the end, Luka really shines, 30-point triple-double in that one. A really exciting game. Obviously, again, with all the threes being hit, was an insanely high scoring game, 143 to 133 in the Bay Area. So the Mavericks heat up. The Warriors now, Schroeder wasn't playing in this one, but you know, could potentially be in their next game played. It was, again, just like I hate to say it, because the stats look really good. 26, 10, and 5 for Steph Curry. 9-for-19 shooting. Yeah. Like, we're not that. Like, the 3-point shot was great, but everything outside of that has been meh. Like, he just doesn't have that kind of bounce. You get a rare 21 points from Draymond Green. My boy Wiggins was on fire. It's just one of those things where, and also I shortchanged Luka. I said 35, 45 point triple double. I should backtrack on that. and then Klay Thompson, again, in a revenge game, he goes off for 7 threes as well. I don't know. It's just crazy to me that this Golden State Warriors team, again, one of the best defensive teams in the league, lets up this many points. Like, I'm just kind of shocked. Like, well, when I was watching this back, like, there's just no defense played on either side in this game. And I know that the Mavericks, we've kind of said, like, they're not like the best defensive team, but that's not really their identity. Like, they're just going to go out there and kill you with their, lethal offensive depth. Yep. But instead, we've gotten shit. Like Steph, if you go off for 26 points, you should expect, to be, especially on your home court, in the lead. Like, you should be expecting to have,
if you get 26 from Steph and 29 from Wiggy. That's got to be a win.
Exactly, man. So I'm just a little like at a loss with the Warriors right now, like, from the front office moves to, everything else that's been going on. I'm still high on them. I still think that they're one of the better teams in the league, even with this record. But like, I do think that Father Time is kind of clawing his way into the backs of the Warriors right now, because they just don't quite look like that team that I expected them to be, and I think a lot of NBA fans expected them to be, especially with the hot start they had early on this year.
Yeah, and you know what a big part of that hot start was? Buddy Hield playing well. Something has happened to him where he just is not a good player most games anymore. He just misses all his shots. And
he's been jawing with the team a lot.
Yes, outside of three-point shooting, famously, doesn't bring that much else to the table. So, he's there. Mm-hmm. Maybe Schroeder's going to get those minutes, as we just talked about, a little bit more, if that's the plan. So, we will see how that goes. But it's also this weird situation where Draymond is coming off the bench. Like, what is that? Like, I understand it's like, oh, we're going to give Looney more of a chance to shine a little bit here. I'm okay to sacrifice and come off the bench as Draymond. When has Draymond ever sacrificed, much of anything? I know offensively, technically he does, but, he still likes to be the center of attention. I'm a little weary of that, and yeah, like, to give up 143 points to any team in the league is, it's outside of what you'd expect from the Warriors at home, and it feels like already they need to make a tweak to this lineup somehow. Again, we'll see how Schroeder fits in, if he does or if he doesn't. But you look at a guy like Kuminga, if you're going to say, oh, you're going to start, like, and if you're going to say that's sort of over Draymond, I know Draymond and him sort of played just about as many minutes in this one. It was Looney who kind of came in and out of that starting lineup. But like, Kuminga's not the strongest defender. Like he's still super athletic and he shows promise. Like we keep talking about, he's got a lot of potential offensively and defensively. But he's not, a super smart connected defender most of the time. He has a lot of mental lapses. So. Like and same thing goes for Wiggins. You know, he's our boy, but he's not the strongest defender either. He can do it on the nights when he's turned on, but you know, not all the time. So you've got to hold on to that defensive identity if you want to be thought of as a good team. Because like you're saying, Steph, he's not having the greatest season. Like, he's still Steph, but age is sort of starting to show signs, and he can't fully take over games like he used to be able to. Like, there's only so much he can do. His game is going to continue to age very nicely because he's still the best shooter on the planet, but still, like, he's not getting by guys nifty to the rim and, you know, making these sort of crazy drive and kick plays like he used to. He's got to kind of conserve his own energy as well. If they don't sort of get back to that early season defensive dominance that they seem to sort of be able to put together there in the early stretches, then they're just gonna go back to what they've been the last few years, which is just a good team, like not a real threat. I know Dallas, like you said, is a super high powered offense. They're fourth overall in the league, and you know, you get great showing from Luka and Clay, but you've got to tighten it up if you're Golden State defensively on your home court. You can't allow that stuff.
Yeah, you look at the raw numbers of the matchup. Both teams shoot over 50 and 51% respectively from three in this matchup. Like, that just tells me that you're not even trying to play defense.
No.
The fast break points, 23-16. Well, like, you're just not moving. You're just, like, this is pickup basketball. It's a bunch of fucking that's like all the out of shape guys I used to play with, where it's nobody wants to actually run. So it's, you know, dead ball. We're walking 3-point line to 3-point line. Nobody is running suicides.
The amount of threes that were taken in this game. I mean, I know it was a record, right? Between the two of them. What was it? Let me do quick math.
48.
Insane. Yeah. Like, it was just. Like a pickup game when everyone's tired at the end of the night, just back and forth, just chucking them up. Not the greatest thing to watch, if I'm being honest. So
at least they were hitting them, but that's just true. There's no intensity to it.
And there's no, if you see a three made every other possession, it gets less exciting. Like I still love watching a three go in, but if it's happening every single time, you're kind of losing the cachet a little bit. But, you know.
Well, I think that's a good way to kind of bridge the gap into our final segment here. Talking about the NBA ratings as a whole. A lot of people have been, giving their own theories, and this is supposed to be a little open discussion on Jordan and I's own opinions on this, as people who've been watching the NBA for well over a decade. The three ball is something that I think has been a popular conversation piece where, you know, when we were talking and addressing why the NBA ratings maybe have been slipping, because it is true that, you know, the product at times, I'll say in the regular season, the playoffs, it's a different game, or in, you know, actual, you know, two top teams are playing each other. Yeah, it's a much better, more enjoyable experience. You actually get to see real basketball. But again, when you get two teams like this that are matching up, this should have been a more intense matchup. Guys should have been stepping up. But in the regular season, there's just so many games. Guys are so overworked at this point that they are more than happy to put in a half-assed effort, I think, especially when you kind of get to this midpoint of the season almost. It's easier to just jack up threes, and everybody's got the green light to do it these days. It's the analytics say that, you know, taking the quick three is the way to go. And if it's not an open layup or dunk, then, you know, you want to take the three. The mid-range, we've talked about it before, you know, that barely anybody really has a masterful mid-range jumper anymore. Yep. Not to say it doesn't work. It's just not what teams are trying to push. So I do think that, you know, the three ball and the rise of it and its popularity has definitely kind of harmed the NBA in a way, because up until, we get to those big games, teams will, like we said, just conserve some energy, and they will run up and down the court and just shoot threes at each other and, just see if they can win the shooting game. And it's kind of a bit of a shame because, the three ball is exciting, and it can, like you said, be a really fun thing to watch when teams are in a shootout when it makes sense. Yeah. But if it's just guys going back and forth, shooting threes and bricking them and going back and up, like you can, again, you can go to your local YMCA and you can see the exact same product.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. It kind of like, it's not a perfect comparison, but I feel like the way that the All-Star game has gone kind of mirrors the regular season just a little bit. It just that the intensity has just dropped 100%. A few rungs. Like there's just this attitude of like, oh, it's, you know, it's a long season. You know, why exactly am I going to go out and try really hard in November? You look back at like eras in the past, like that wasn't actually an issue in like the Kobe era. Like when Kobe would step out on the court, and he's just one example, there was no like, oh, I'm not really going to try today. Like, and I know it's like, oh, Mamba mentality, it's the lore. Like, I'm sure there were games where he kind of mailed it in, but for the most part, he was of a generation of players that went out there, and it's not that they were doing it like to entertain, but they really just took pride in going and like playing basketball every night in a way that was, you know, true to themselves. And like a guy like Steve Nash too, like you just knew what you were getting every night with these guys. Whereas I feel like today it's so hit and miss. First of all, whether a guy even plays, you know, if you're talking about
management is another issue we've talked about a lot on this podcast.
Yeah. So we know the issues with that, but even when guys do play, like, it's like, oh, you know, he only plays a bit in the first quarter, then he checks out. And there's this way guys play when they don't care versus when they do, that there never seemed to be that distinction. Guys would just play the same way every time. That's why All-Star games were more fun, because it's like, I'm not going to expect a guy like Kobe to come out and just like half-ass something. Like, he just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. So in the All-Star game, it's like he came out and no, he was going to try and hit shots. He was going to, you know, he wasn't going to play like it was the finals, but he was going to play some defense. And for whatever reason, that mentality has just changed. And yeah, I do think it affects the product, because, you know, that permeates through the screen if you're watching a regular season game. And it's like, well, if these guys don't care, how do you expect any fan to care? And it's not, and it's like what they do at the All-Star game, where you got Steph, you know, going, there's literally no one between him and Giannis in the basket, because everyone else isn't even bothering to get back on defense. Mm-hmm. And you throw like a, you know, off the backboard or off the ground alley-oop to Giannis. And then, you know, it's a, you know, technically fun thing to watch. And the announcer's like, oh, but then it's like, that's not fucking fun. I don't want to just watch guys do nothing. And that's kind of how it, like, even though it's technically athletically impressive, that's kind of how I feel sometimes with these 3-point shootouts. You know, much like this Mavericks game, it's like, okay, yes, I know that a three can be exciting, and that's very cool that you shot a deep three, but all you're doing is just taking the ball out, hitting it ahead. No one is even attempting to guard you. And it's just, it's not fun. That's not why anyone started watching any sport ever, just to see guys kind of half-ass it. So, you know, that's a problem within itself. But then if we're talking about largely or broadly speaking, the ratings, I just think it's harder for casual fans to latch on to players these days. There's just not that many fun sort of outgoing personalities that exist as stars in this league. Whereas before, I think we were spoiled for them. There was a lot. Again, I'll harken back to the Kobe era as an example. You know, you in the heyday, like 2008, let's say, you had a guy like Kobe, you had LeBron, you had a young Kevin Durant, like, and then, you know, shortly after that, you had an exciting young player like Steph. Like, you had all these guys, generational type talents, all playing sort of at the same time. Obviously Kobe was kind of phased out, you know, at that point, but still
probably include like Tim Duncan in there as well.
Yeah. If you go earlier, Dirk. You got Dirk, you got KG. So you have a lot of these kind of guys that, I don't know, they just seem kind of larger than life, and they ended their careers as NBA legends, you know, if they're not already, you know, still playing in the case of Steph, KD and LeBron. But like today, it's like the stars that are the biggest, number one, are from outside of the US. So I think automatically that makes it harder for the average American fan, let's say, to connect with them. And a lot of them are boring. Luka and Jokic are boring as fuck. It's not like they give great quotes all the time. Yeah. Like, I know they get chippy, and Jokic will say a funny thing every once in a while. And, you know,
I like horses.
Luka yells at the refs, but they're not that captivating. And the American stars, outside of Anthony Edwards, I think he's got a chance to sort of step into that limelight. But again, his team is not doing very well right now. He's not in the top five, let's say, of MVP caliber players, at least the season he's having right now. So, you know, he's great, but he's not sort of at that level. And, you know, you look around, Jason Tatum, kind of a boring guy, to be honest. Jalen Brown's a bit weird.
He's corny, man. He is so personality-wise, he is corny.
Of course, so corny. Even SGA is a bit corny. SGA, I think if you ask Americans, they would just assume he's American, even though he's obviously Canadian. But he's not that controversial. You know, he's got the fun Instagram, captions and everything. But he's not, I don't know. Yeah, there's just this kind of unspoken kind of charisma that I feel like guys used to have. That it's just not there. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons we can go on about, even the length of the schedule. I know that's been a hot topic. I understand that, you know, it would probably make the product better, but then you get into the issue of, you know, that kind of screws with records all time if you change out the 82 game thing. But
it's been 82 games forever. I don't know what the deal is now. Like, I don't remember this being such a fucking issue 20 years ago. Like, no. It's been like it's been more and more and more. And I get that, yeah, there's more eyeballs and there's more expectations, but you're also getting paid a fucking ton of money, man. Like, your life is not that bad. It's not this hard. I know it can be stressful, and I've never been a professional athlete. I don't know what it's like to be traveling around, 250 days of the year, whatever. But again, you are making insane amount of money to play a sport. You need to put in the work. That's part of the job. You sign up for. You agree to do this. So I don't really have that sympathy. We've seen guys historically, they play 82 games. Mikal Bridges played 83 games. 2 seasons ago. You don't see him crying and complaining. He still continues to be like an Iron Man. If players want to play that much, they will do it. It's these guys who are a little afraid of injuries or have had nagging injuries. I know that big thing now too is that guys come into the league and back in the let's say the 90s, even early 2000s, really you might play a little bit of basketball in your youth, but you really don't start playing a lot of games till you're in high school. And when you play in high school, it's your high school team. That's what guys were always playing on. But now with the AAU, we've got kids that are playing and they've got highlight tapes and they're playing 100 games in
this
a year.
This is a huge issue.
10 years. Yes. And so they have their ankles are shot, their knees are blown. And then by the time that, they could be in the best position to be like a solid, five-star prospect that's, say, committing to a D1 team, you could blow your knee out in your freshman year and you never see it again. Whereas in the past, your body wouldn't have had that much wear and tear. So it's not like I think that it's, the NBA coupled with just like kind of the sports culture at this point. So much that weighs on you. And again, it sucks because if you don't do all these other things, chances are you're not even going to get noticed. Like you have to. That's why we're seeing so many, like it used to really be like, a sport that predominantly a lot of the athletes came from, low-income homes desperate opportunities and such. Now you're seeing a lot of people who come from, the suburbs. We're seeing a lot of very well-off people.
It's becoming a lot of juniors. Sport to play now more than it used to be. Yeah.
If you want to get out there and get some exposure, you've got to have at least the tournament fees ready to pay. Yep. And those aren't always cheap, let alone the travel costs and everything else that goes into it. So I think that's, it plays into the fact that guys don't want to play as much because they know their bodies can't handle it. Talk about number 21 from the Philadelphia 76ers. But this is, that's an issue in itself. I think that it's also just sometimes guys, they're getting paid, they're in the NBA, they're in it long enough, you kind of lose sight of it. But again, think of every single time you go out there, every single person that's watching you, they've paid their hard-earned money. This is their, this might be the highlight of their week. If you go out there and you mail it in, because like you're in the entertainment business, at the end of the day, it's sports, it's entertainment. You're putting on a show for people. They are paying to see you. You're not in some weird, government run thing. Like you, this is a legitimate, it's a luxury. This is not something that needs to happen. We don't need professional sports in the world, technically. So you should be wanting to go out there and make your money's worth, become a star. And I think, again, that's part of it now is teams tell the players, fuck it, it doesn't matter. Just rest up and we're just going to try and win and make money. And that's all it comes down to.
Yeah. 100%. And another thing, about when guys come into the league, they've already got so many miles on their bodies now. It used to be that guys would play different sports throughout the year. There's a lot of research done on that recently, where if you're doing the exact same movements over and over and over again, it's obviously more likely that you're going to injure something by doing that. Whereas back in the day, guys would play you know, basketball in, you know, in the winter, or whatever. They play baseball in the summer, football in the fall. Like they, you know, they do all these different things. And again, it would be nowhere near the amount of, high intensity fucking games on through the AAU circuit. I honestly think, too, that's why you look at a guy like Jokic. Most of these guys who come from Europe, it's not quite the same culture over there. And it's way more of a focus on practice than it is on games, which is way less, you know, hard on your body, just generally speaking. And a lot of these guys are way more durable. Jokic never gets hurt. I know you know, Luka has his, you know, issues, but for the most part, he's a fairly durable guy and he's not really of the load management, you know, type. And most of these guys who come over and have success from Europe are just, better suited for that as well. So that's another thing we got to just figure out as a culture in sort of North American basketball upbringing.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say just about ratings, like, I think this is partly, you know, it's a fallout from the decision and then Kevin Durant's move from OKC to the Warriors. Those two things felt like they really decoupled players from teams. It was like a player doesn't really have to be as part of a team identity anymore. Like LeBron is just LeBron. LeBron's not really a Laker. He's not even really a Cav, like, or a Heat. He's just his own being. Same thing with KD. Whereas before, like, you know, Kobe was a Laker. You know, Magic was a Laker. Larry Bird was a Celtic. You know, you go on down all the legends of the game. Even a guy like Steph. You know, Steph is a Warrior and always has been. But he's playing now in this era where it just doesn't feel like if you're an average fan, like you're gonna or a casual fan. You're going to like really associate your favorite star with a team. So if it's going to be like that, you lose what you get in like football, which, you know, is the ratings king, where like you have these really passionate fan bases that rally around teams. And it's not quite as important, like, you know, which players are on those teams. You got a similar thing with baseball as well, where you just have all these like generations and generations of fans of teams. Basketball doesn't really have that many super passionate, like, fans of teams. Like, obviously everyone who lives in a city is a fan of the team or whatever, but you get way more of these guys who are just, or just people in general, NBA fans in general, who are fans of, you know, of LeBron or of KD or of whoever. Yeah. And if you're going to,
I think hockey's another one you could say, like, teams are huge over player.
Yes. Yes. And I think there was a time when basketball was more like that, but we've been getting further and further away from it. So if you're going to have a scenario like that where stars are what matters and teams don't really matter, then if, like I just said, your stars aren't that exciting, then your ratings are going to go down. Cause you know, that worked for a while when KD and LeBron were at their absolute apex and you had all this player movement of these really, really good players that drove a lot of attention. Those guys are old now and no one's really picking up the slack to that same level. We don't have the same hype. Even a guy like Wemby, like, he was so hyped up. He is nowhere near, now that he's in the league, at least in my opinion, where LeBron was in like the early years in terms of like the eyeballs that were sort of driven to him. Wemby obviously is a big pull, but I just think that the level of stars isn't where it needs to be to sort of replace these guys that are being phased out. And, you know, it's a stars league. So that's going to be a problem, but hey, we'll do our best. The NBA just needs to surface up this podcast more if they want the ratings to go up. That's very simple.
100%. The last two things I'll say too, and it kind of goes hand in hand with a lot of what we've already said. But the first is also, you know, with you're talking with player identity over team identity. Another reason that, like, again, especially throughout the regular season, you don't see a lot of people, you know, watching the games or giving a shit, is because, like, and this goes for this season especially, and I feel like the last couple of years, like, I've been caring less about actually catching games live instead of just watching back, you know, the late cuts.
Yeah.
Because there's like, when was the last regular season game that you were like, okay, I gotta watch it. I have to watch it, because there's no rivalries anymore. Not even like, yes, when two great teams play each other, like, that's going to, you know, catch your interest. But all the biggest games, all the best games I can ever, you know, think of are always games where it meant more than just the win. You know, it was getting the bragging rights. That doesn't exist anymore. Like, we kind of talked about it when we were talking about the Warriors playing the Rockets. They had a rivalry. That was one of the last, like, kind of rivalries you can even, like, isolate and say, like, those two teams didn't like each other. And the Clippers and the Warriors had some beef there, you know, the early 2010s, the Heat and the Mavericks. Like, there were legitimate rivals out there. Again, I throughout the entire 2000s, I mean, the Western Conference, the Lakers, the Spurs, and the Suns. Those three teams despised each other. Like, they had so many good battles and wars.
And the Mavs in there.
Like, yeah, like, it. You could even throw in, you know, KG, mix it in with the Timberwolves. Yep. Like, there were a lot of battles in the regular season that people were hyped up to see. And that's like in other sports, there are big rivalry games. There are matchups that people want to go see because they know that the players are going to take it like it's a playoff atmosphere. You don't see it all that much in the current day NBA. Like, hell, if you really want to say it, like, another one of the last ones, like, as a Raptors fan, Toronto versus Cleveland, when LeBron was in Cleveland, even in the regular season, those games were fucking exciting to watch because both teams wanted to get that win. Obviously, the LeBronto, they could only seem to beat him in the regular season, but there were some crazy, crazy games. And again, maybe we're looking through this with nostalgic eyes, but I really don't think that the players like have all that much beef. And you know, I kind of think that kind of goes hand in hand with so many guys flipping teams. You're not forming a team identity or bond. So it's like, oh, well, this guy had beef with this guy, but that guy's not on the team anymore. But this guy's on the team who had beef with another guy who was on a different team when they had a bit of a scrum one time. Like, it's all just a mishmash of talent now and history that doesn't quite add up into an interesting basketball game.
Yeah, and it's harder to be – I think that makes it harder to be a casual fan. Like, let's say –
No, 100%.
Like, let's say, just as a theory, if it takes 2 or 3 years for the casual fan to really get used to one player on one team and it's like, this player is now on that team, I can connect that in my brain. These guys are moving around more than that. So it's like, you know, this guy moves. It's like, no, you have to really be up on it to know what even matters and what goes on. And again, if it's driven by the stars and not the teams, yeah, like you're saying, you're not going to tune in as a casual fan and be like, ooh, Charlotte versus the Hawks. What an electric game is that going to be? I mean, that's a bad example, but any two teams, really, there's no real bad blood. Because one, the teams keep changing. And these guys, if you're not trying that hard in the regular season, there's no intensity for beef to form out of. So there's a lot working against Adam Silver right now. But, you know, there's hope. I think there's hope. There's ways that we can solve this and maybe making it harder. You know, each time the new collective bargaining agreement or whatever comes out and they make it harder for guys to leave in free agency. Like, I do think... not to mention, you know, this apron stuff with trades and things. Like, I do think we are, at least we all, I think in general, the owners know that they need to sort of correct back towards making it harder for players to move around. And I do think that's a good thing. But, you know, we're still not there yet. But, you know, we'll see if we can be one day. We'll keep the memory of the good NBA alive for as long as we are. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
The last thing that I will also throw out there, just because it's, you know, if we're talking actual numbers of, you know, viewership, streaming services, illegal streams obviously do play a factor.
Yeah, you can't get an accurate reading.
Yeah, I do want to say, like, the numbers wouldn't look as bad, you know, and the league does lose money from it. But I'll say this as the counterpoint to it, like, the NBA does not do a good job at making the sport accessible. Like, cable is dead. Like, not that many people, especially in, like, our demographic and their target demographic, which is, you know, that maybe let's say early teens to early 30s male demographic is probably their target. Yep. Most of those guys don't want to have cable. They don't want to have all these channels. And then again, if you have cable, let's talk about us. Like, as Canadians, like, if we get our sports packages, do you know what fucking games we're going to get? We get the Raptors games and maybe one out-of-market Western Conference game. Yep. If you have NBA TV, you can get to watch, like, the Hornets and the Hawks. Like,
the game shittiest matchups ever.
Like, so it is hard to actually get to watch the games you want to watch. Even if you buy the fucking league pass.
So expensive.
Then it's expensive. It's an added cost. And also, streaming, not that reliable. I fight with all these streams that I pay for multiple different sports all the time for not working. And then the blackouts are one of the stupidest
things.
That's
what I was going to say. If you buy a league pass, you can't watch your own team play. Well, how does that make any
sense? Makes no sense. Yeah, because again, if you're buying league pass, chances are you don't have cable. Like,
I think they just need to
reevaluate that and figure out a way to make it work. My dream still is that there would be one way that I would pay like $300 for the year or something, $400. Like, I'd pay an absurd amount of money if it was just one app had all the
every
four
game?
Main four big four sports you can just watch.
Oh yeah. Oh shit. Hey.
Like,
Elon Musk,
I know it's impossible. It'll never happen.
SportsLink.
Yeah, there's too many different broadcasters, rights, owners, yes, whatever. Yes. Like I understand it's not feasible, but there's just got to be a better way to do that. And I do think the NBA, as well as professional sports as a whole, is really hurting because people just can't afford to watch the product. They it's too difficult. It just doesn't work. And so yeah, they're finding the easier way to just go and click Stream East, click Sports Surge, click all whatever your preferred illegal domain is, and find games.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, bleep those out. I want to keep gatekeeping the good ones before they start crashing. Right.
Those are the easy ones, man. I can put you on some other ones.
That's true. Anytime I need one, I'm like, Matt, have you got this obscure? I think I asked you like, because I was trying to watch some fucking Olympic qualifying basketball in Spain last summer or something, and what you gave me worked. So yeah, you're my go-to. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of issues. But yeah, at the end of the day, I do think there's more interest in the NBA than can be measured. So it does look worse than people are making it out to be. But again, like I, as much as I complain about the bandwagoners and everything, every sport needs just the casual sports fan to want to tune in. And the NBA is just not giving those people, that sort of access and that way in. But the NBA is a great sport to watch. There is a lot of compelling shit going on all the time. So there's got to be a way to figure that out and tap into that. But yeah, there's a lot of changes that need to be made for that to happen.
Bring back defense also. We didn't even get into that.
Maybe some defense would be good.
Yeah, a little less free throw shooting, a little more defense, a little less flopping.
Yeah, when it comes to the end of the game thing, I don't understand. I heard Bill Simmons float some idea of like in the last 2 minutes, the first free throw is worth two, or is it to speed it up? Just give the teams less fucking timeouts. They don't need 8 million timeouts. Like the free throw issue happens in tandem with teams having timeouts, being able to set things up. You
it's a timeout. Guy shoots one free throw. Other team takes a timeout.
Exactly. Just give them one, two, or even three less timeouts to take. The games will fly by at the end. I don't understand. That's just such a simple thing. That the league can do. So, you know, that's my big fucking idea. It's not that complicated, but, it would work.
Well, let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk how to make basketball great again. Give us your best solutions at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, TikTok, X, Facebook for all you old heads out there. And we'll be back on Friday recapping the NBA Cup Championship. Oh boy, I can't wait. As well as, maybe, who knows? Maybe more trade talk to break down. I don't know. Fingers crossed.
You know
me? But there's gonna be always something to find, something to talk about here in the NBA. We'll be back on Friday. Thanks. Big Dog Ball Talk, Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel. And as my good friend Jordan always says.
Matt, I will step up for my country. I'll become the prime minister. Mm. Justin Trudeau steps down, which seems like a possibility after today. For anyone not up on Canadian politics, big day. Should I even get into it? Our finance minister resigned anyway. But I will take up the mantle if I'm called upon to do so.